Mic check. 1, 2, 3. How does that sound? Okay, great. Let's get started then. Welcome everyone to Series 3 of the ESG Factor podcast. I'm Vincent McCarthy, founder of ESG Ireland and the Responsible Investment Institute, creator and host of the ESG Factor podcast and the ESG Factor magazine. Even though it's a year on from Series 2, I'm still getting messages on LinkedIn and emails from people telling me they enjoyed particular episodes. And I know from doing a radio course at Today FM, I think it was back in 2016, I remember listening to presenters and they'd say that, you know, be careful what you how you read into the feedback that you get, because there's a tendency for I suppose people that are taking a negative opinion on something, they feel more compelled often to leave their comments or to share feedback rather than somebody who has enjoyed the experience. People who have, let's say, enjoyed listening to something will enjoy it and move on, whereas somebody that has a particular reaction to it, let's say, tends to be more compelled to respond. So I'm delighted to say that the messages that I've been receiving on the podcast have been very positive, and which is always a great support. And you know, if you'd like to express any interest or feedback or thoughts on the upcoming episodes, you can drop me an email at vincent@theesgfactor.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Or if you'd like to join our Patreon community and support the making of more independent content like this, you can sign up at theesgfactor.com. Today is intended to be an introductory episode to Series 3, ahead of the discussions I'll be having with leaders from a number of different organizations on the subject of responsible investing and sustainability. The objective is the same, to deliver knowledge on this far-reaching subject. And I've been very clear with the guests that come on that this isn't about selling their particular organization. This is about sharing content that can help empower decision makers. And so we've some great guests lined up, and we'll be discussing a variety of different topics. Our first episode will be focused on the climate transition, discussing what that means, how should investors think about the climate transition and what it means for their investments. We'll be looking at sustainability and quality. How do you think about pursuing potentially a more concentrated investment approach, and how quality and sustainability go hand in hand? We'll also be having an episode to discuss sustainability from a risk perspective and how that's incorporated into the investment approach. I'll also be discussing ESG ratings with a director from one of the leading ESG rating firms. And I think this will be an important discussion because we're seeing a lot of coverage at the moment on ESG ratings. And so while ESG ratings may not be perfect, I think the most important thing is that we understand their intended purpose. A lot of the misconception around ESG ratings is based on a misunderstanding of what they are intended for. And so clearing that up will, I think, resolve some of the misunderstanding. So overall, we've a very interesting series lined up. What I would say is that on average, each episode will probably be about 30 minutes long. So, you know, we're touching briefly on what is a very extensive subject at times. So I'm trying to cover off some of the most important points in a short amount of time. So if this is a subject that interests you, or if you're working in the field of investments, you know, I would say that it's a subject that requires time. So how to incorporate responsible investment into your advisory practice, your investment fund, or whatever it may be, or incorporating sustainability into a business model of a company, or even into the policy making at a political level. There is a lot of questions that need to be asked. So there is, I suppose, a degree of philosophical thinking required, because, you know, it's not about me giving you the answers. It's about maybe giving you some information and knowledge that can help you ask the right questions to find the answers that are right for you. So I think when it comes to responsible investing and sustainability, it does come down to personal preferences in the end of the day. And as regulation is changing, with the regulation coming in August that will require sustainability preferences to be incorporated into the advisory process, so financial advisors will be required to discuss this with their clients, I think it's going to, there are going to be some growing pains, because at the end of the day, this is not going to be a one size fits all, and there is going to be a lot of work required to help clients understand what the incorporation of sustainability means within investments, and to, I suppose, help them articulate their own preferences. And then at the same time, we need those decision makers, those capital allocators, to be informed enough to understand the investment solutions that exist and how those investment solutions are incorporating sustainability into the investment mandates. So there's a big change, I think, in terms of the investment industry and what sustainable finance is trying to do as a whole in terms of changing behavior and aligning capital with the preferences of particular individuals. But at the same time, there is no guarantee that individuals will prioritize sustainability. So, but those discussions have to happen. So there is a huge amount of work required across all stakeholders to come to terms what this idea of sustainability means within business and within investments. And so the purpose of the podcast really is to provide some engaging content on a subject that can be quite in-depth. If you think back to the first episode of the ESG Factor podcast, when I discussed my own responsible investment journey from working in impact investing in Guatemala in 2017 to going back to Ireland at the end of 2018 and putting on a workshop called Considering the Impact of Your Investments from Guatemala to the Mainstream, my thinking at the time was that portfolio management was evolving so that we would move beyond this traditional lens of just risk and return to incorporate some measure of impact. And I suppose that's what we've seen to a certain extent in terms of how regulation has changed and how, I suppose, people are asking more questions in terms of the underlying impact of their investments. So at a regulatory level, we've seen big changes in terms of the requirements being placed on investment managers around the disclosures when it comes to sustainability. And then on the other side of it, the regulation that's coming in that will demand more discussions around the sustainability preferences of clients. That to me says the direction that we're moving towards is where we have reporting around risk, return, and impact when it comes to the investment of capital. Now, of course, the application will vary dramatically, and ultimately the end user will have to, I suppose, prioritize what they believe is important when it comes to impact. From my perspective, I've always thought that the way we should be looking at this is to see sustainability as the challenges that we need to address, which have been built up over the last number of decades, and that we have frameworks like the ESG framework, the Sustainable Development Goals, to help us on that path to incorporate sustainability, but ultimately that all stakeholders would need to incorporate this into their decision-making frameworks, and that we would arrive at some point where we can, I suppose, be comfortable about the future of our planet, and I suppose the future for everybody that's living on this planet. And that was the idea of the Sustainable Development Goals. Obviously, we're a long way away from achieving what we could maybe characterize as a secure future. But at a very basic level, in terms of the planet sustaining us, I suppose the assumption of a secure future in that sense, it should be a priority across all decision-making frameworks. The Sustainable Development Goals agreed in 2015 to be achieved by 2030 are at least a demonstration of the fact that we can imagine what a secure future might look like. But again, our lack of progress is the big issue on that front. And the invasion of Ukraine by Russia is only going to make the situation worse. And to be honest, it makes a joke of the whole idea of sustainable economic development, because world leaders seem no closer to working together to achieve this secure future that they had talked about in 2015. In fact, we seem more likely to repeat the mistakes of the past than to working towards a sustainable economy that is able to provide a secure future for everyone. So that's unfortunately the nature of things at a high level. We're still seeing changes at a business level and an investment level in terms of regulation. And I suppose from a business perspective, they operate within the rules of the game and the rules are changing. At the same time, some would argue that the rules aren't changing fast enough. So the increased focus on disclosures, some might say, is too light touch, in that there should be stricter rules in terms of the unsustainable business activity that is still permitted within our economic system. And of course, that's a challenge when you've got regional borders and different regulation across the globe. So there's still that competition at a national level that people don't want to impose regulation that would put one nation at a disadvantage versus another. So that remains, again, our challenge at a global level. But from an individual business perspective as well, there is a focus on what the end user wants in terms of the consumers and the investors. And so as more investors and consumers express an interest in sustainability, companies, even without regulation, will naturally adapt to demonstrate their sustainability credentials. But okay, of course, this leads to the risk of greenwashing at the same time, because companies, in the rush to portray themselves as sustainable, will be more focused on creating the appearance rather than actually following through on specific initiatives that might bring about fundamental change at a business model level. And so that remains the biggest challenge. And that's where the investment managers need to come in and say, right, from an oversight and governance perspective, we will ensure that the companies that are making these claims around sustainability and their commitments across those three pillars of environmental, social, and governance, that there is actually some follow-through happening. And that's part of the, I suppose, the active engagement that investment managers need to prioritize. Now, at the same time, specific investment funds will lay out their mandates in terms of how they prioritize sustainability and the use of the ESG framework. And that's where you arrive at a situation where investors might care about sustainability, but then they're faced with the challenge of trying to ascertain what the various investment fund options are doing. So that's where regulation has tried to focus on ensuring that the investment funds that the end investor may be going into, the average individual that walks into an advisor and says, I want to invest my money to save for retirement, etc., and they say sustainability is a priority for them. Well, how is that preference aligned with the most suitable investment solution? And so the arrival of regulation that is going to bring greater disclosures is trying to prioritize the removal of that risk of greenwashing at an investment fund level. So saying that if an investment fund makes claims around the incorporation of the environmental, social, and governance criteria, how are they doing that and how are they following through on it? So there's less chance of greenwashing happening. And at the same time, if a fund says we have a direct sustainability investment objective, okay, well, what is that objective? And how do you set about achieving that? And so the regulation is mostly focused on trying to remove that greenwashing that is going to happen in a system where the various stakeholders can see that sustainability is becoming a priority and we can maybe get away with it by creating the appearance of being more sustainable rather than actually making the fundamental changes that need to happen. And I suppose unless those changes happen across those various stakeholders, the whole thing just becomes a show, and we just won't move any closer towards achieving what we might characterize as a secure future. So when you think about it, you can see why it is so important to close the knowledge gap. And that's why I set up ESG Ireland, to focus on thought leadership, to empower people and to focus on education, to be disruptive when it comes to education and to empower decision makers to think about sustainability and responsible investing. Because unless we have more informed individuals, then the level of accountability through the system is going to be severely weakened. So I would say that what we need is individuals to be much more informed to understand the sustainability challenges, but also to be able to have meaningful conversations with their advisors, with their trustees of pension schemes, etc., so that these types of things are being considered within their investments. And whether it's investing in a pension scheme or in an individual personal investment account, we should be able to have meaningful conversations to understand where our money is going and the impact that that money is having. And so I think that along that chain of the client to the trustees, the advisors, the consultants, the investment managers, the board, the company executives, etc., there's a huge amount to be done to make sure that we have a greater level of consistency across all stakeholders so that we can be confident that the sustainability preferences of clients are reflected in the underlying investments to which they are aligned. That still brings us back to that major assumption that the client will actually have sustainability preferences. In other words, that they would actually care about the impact of their investments. So that if they had a choice between two different funds, that they would be more likely to select a fund that was delivering more of a positive impact, or they would be less likely to select the fund that is delivering more of a negative impact. So those preferences, I guess, particularly in a European context, and that, the fact that it's coming in August, that this will have to be explicitly part of the discussion, we'll get to see at an advisory level whether or not those individual clients are genuinely concerned about sustainability and the impact of their investments. Certainly working with financial advisors in Ireland, the picture is mixed. And I would say that that's probably down to the fact that advisors have been maybe reluctant at some level to make this part of the discussion, and so they're being led by regulation. Seneca said, the man who is unaware of doing anything wrong has no desire to put it right. And I think that's relevant in this context because potentially, I suppose, as individuals become more informed about where they're investing and what their money is being used for, then perhaps they'll take more of an interest in where their money is going. It remains to be seen. And I think at the same time, we are still faced with the fact and the reality that unsustainable business activity is still too profitable. And when it comes down to it, finding sustainable companies is a challenge. And so over time, potentially we get those changes at a company level as well, so that it'll be easier for investment managers to source return, I guess, in a sustainable way. So finding companies that are either delivering a real positive impact or have materially reduced the negative impacts that they've been having on stakeholders. And so when we talk about responsible investing, the investment managers are in effect developing a range of solutions to meet the range of preferences that exist at a client level. So in the end of the day, it's up to the client to express their own sustainability preferences. One practical example that might give people a little bit of insight in terms of how some famous investors are thinking about where the line should be drawn: Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger at the Berkshire Hathaway conference in 1997, they were asked about tobacco and investing in tobacco, and they'd say they had previously invested in tobacco, but they were no longer invested in tobacco based on the investment case. But they told the story of a chewing tobacco company that they met in Memphis, and they said, fantastic investment opportunity, one of the best companies from an investment perspective that they'd seen. But they left the meeting and decided not to invest in the company. They just said that they didn't feel comfortable with it, to be involved in the production of tobacco, etc., given the fact that it was directly linked to cancer. But nevertheless, the point is they made their investment decision based on what they saw as a moral line that they didn't want to cross. And Charlie Munger summed it up when Warren Buffett asked him to comment on it. He said, I think each company, each individual has to draw its own ethical and moral lines. And personally, I like the messy complexity of having to do that. It makes life interesting. I don't think we can justify our decision to do that. We just have to draw the line somewhere between what we're willing to do and what we're not. And we draw it by our own lights. And so the point is that each client, be it an individual client or an institutional client, will have to draw their own line when it comes to their approach to responsible investing. And that seems to be the case with regulation as well, because, for instance, in Europe, even though they've set out to define what a sustainable investment means or what sustainability preferences means, there's still a huge amount of room for interpretation. And it's the same with the categorization of investment funds by specific articles, from light green to dark green, whatever you may like to call it. There's room for interpretation. And I suppose the decision will be with the capital allocators to define their thresholds and to set their lines. And then most important of all, that they're transparent and honest in terms of their marketing and communication with clients, because that's ultimately what the regulation is trying to ensure, that there's no misleading of consumers when it comes to the incorporation of sustainability into the investment process. As you'll have gathered from today, the subject of responsible investing has many different layers, different stakeholders with different responsibilities, but it's important not to lose sight of the fact that responsible investing is simply the evolution, I think, of the investment approach, where we've traditionally focused on risk and return, and now we're moving to a world where we're much more focused on the impact of those investments. And I think that can only be a positive thing, as long as it's done in an authentic way.